You're listening to the Table of Malcontents, where Aaron Armstrong, Dave Schrader, and Barnabas Piper talk about the books they love and a few they really don't to help you be a better reader. This week's episode of the Table of Malcontents is sponsored by Gospel-Centered Discipleship. They're releasing a new title in their GCD Books line, A Restless Age, How St. Augustine Helps You Make Sense of Your 20s by Austin Gohn. This book takes readers through Augustine's confessions to show how five searches young adults undertake in their 20s, searches for meaning, habit, belonging, love, and work, are actually searches for rest, the kind of rest that cannot be satisfied until we're satisfied in Christ. A Restless Age is a very thoughtful application of Augustine to the challenges of young adulthood, and one that I would definitely encourage you check out. To learn more about the book, head over to gcdiscipleship.com/books and click on the Amazon link in the show notes to get your copy today. Hey everybody, welcome to Table of Malcontents. I'm Aaron. With me, as always, are Barnabas.
Yo.
And Dave.
I'm present, man. And we're not going to do our 6 minutes of banter anymore because we got a complaint online about that.
We're nothing if not responsive to complaints.
Absolutely. I know.
You know, those hurt us a lot.
They do, personally.
Yeah. They almost hurt our feeling.
So much singular. That we're going to talk about our feelings for another 6 minutes just so this person can feel it.
So we can work it out a little bit.
Yeah. You know, it's workshop time. And, you know, we figured what better way to do a little bit of workshopping on our feelings than to invite a friend onto the show.
A Canadian friend.
Another
Canadian.
I know.
We have two Canadians in
this
podcast.
Oh, Canada.
Listen
whoa,
to those.
Whoa.
Hey,
maybe you guys should both do
that. Sultry singing voice is belonging to Daniel M. Daniel, thanks for joining us on the show.
Thanks
man.
For saying my last name correctly.
Of course, of course.
As opposed to
what do you? What do you get?
I preached at a church a few weeks ago, and apparently all week long they were prepping the senior pastor to introduce me, and they were like, "It's Eam, it's Daniel Eam." And then that morning, Sunday morning,
is that like hyper-cultural sensitivity to the point of not getting it right?
Maybe okay. I don't know. Mm. So that morning he was like, "Oh, hey, and this is Daniel Eam," and I was like, "No, that's not how you say my last name." Yeah. He's like, he like looks at the other
assistant. That's when you look at him like, I'm Canadian.
Yeah, it's like week long.
And that day, someone got fired.
Wow. That's great. That's awesome.
Yep.
No, this wasn't a Harvest Bible
Now,
chapel.
This is like,
whoa!
Hey, I used to go to a Harvest Bible Chapel.
Okay, all right. Moving on. This is a very intentional podcast today, though.
There's feeling.
There's definitely feeling.
There's feeling.
Yeah.
All right, so Daniel is one of our teammates here at Lifeway. He is a former direct teammate of Barnabas.
That's right. So Daniel ran me off. We hired him and I left.
Well, that's right. Man.
No, that's not true. We worked together for what, a year and a half, 2 years?
Yeah. It was good.
And then I switched over to the book publishing side from the leadership team, which is
bigger
where
and
Daniel
better
is.
Things. Yep.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
One would say.
One could say.
Sure it is.
Could say.
It might could not say. Be true, but one could say it.
Oh
man.
We'll bleep that
Let's
out
go
later.
Back to singing in Canada.
I like that you're going to bleep that out, but leave the James McDonald joke in.
Well,
it's never too soon, Aaron.
That's true. That's true.
All right. Nope. In his case, it's way too late. Shall I continue?
No, let's not. Let's not.
Okay. You guys should like put insert music for that now. And have audience background. Ooh.
Yeah. We may just actually. Thank you for that idea. I like that. All right. So Daniel is not only one of our teammates and a fellow Canadian. So it's so nice to not be the only one.
Yeah. Who's 50% here?
That's right. It's evenly matched now, guys.
Yes.
It's a 1-to-1 ratio of Americans.
The Americans
to
will be more opinionated.
But, you know, Barnabas, you're pretty close to being Canadian, though.
It's true. I was on a border state growing up.
Yeah.
So.
But he doesn't speak like a Minnesotan.
I can.
Yeah.
But I don't. I don't.
You
from
don't?
Minnesota.
I don't. Oh. I kind of wish, I just once wish I could hear you go full Minnesotan.
I can't go full for a lengthy period of time. Now, you drop me into the context and I'll absorb what's around me. It'll start coming out.
It's crazy. I mean, within a day of me being in Minnesota a few months ago,
I started
doing the diphthong.
Yeah.
Minnesota.
Right.
Yeah. Because everyone's right. doing it.
That's right. That's right.
Is this 6 minutes of banter?
We're getting there. I think we're about
we're
there.
Oh, we're about just 4.5 minutes. We said we wouldn't, and then we did.
Oh, man.
As we do.
What you need to know is we're horrible liars. Yeah. And,
well,
I blame Daniel for that, too.
No. Well, we are
always
Canadian,
always blame the guest.
And
we'll choose politeness over truth.
That's true. That's true.
We can explore that a little bit further. But here's what we're going to do, though.
Yeah,
we're going to talk about Barnabas's favorite genre of books, leadership books today. And
I love them.
Yeah, so much that he's like, from running LifeWay Leadership in that perspective to Daniel. But Daniel is our resident expert in leadership books right now. So we're going to revisit this topic. We've talked about this many times.
We have.
Aaron has an opinion or three about this as well.
I do.
Okay, all right.
I'm going to see how long this goes before we talk about John
we're
Maxwell.
We're going to get to it. All right, here
before
we go.
Talk about John's involvement with John Maxwell.
Here we go. Here.
Well, Dave is usually silent leader. Whenever I rip on John Maxwell, so.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, any of these authors I've worked with in the past or have to continue working with in some fashion, I just don't know what to do in these moments, but yeah. All right, let's get to it. Harry Truman once said, "Not all readers are leaders, but all leaders are readers." Okay, now that like goes, I see
is that a real quote or is that like one of those ones that we just throw different names on?
You know,
like I'm pretty sure Ben Franklin,
it
and
might have been Abraham
Winston
Lincoln.
Churchill, and
it probably
was Flannery O'Connor.
Plato, Plato guys.
When I search Plato, I find Harry Truman's face the most. That's it. So we're gonna go with Harry Truman.
The internet has spoken,
the internet has
so
declared
much.
That
it might have been C.S. Lewis and Rick Warren.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, wait, that's a different
no,
one.
No, the buck stops here.
It sounds like a Rick Warren quote because it rhymes, so that it could work.
But this is, but again, the we've already revealed the inherent problem with leadership books in a quote.
Yes.
But that's okay.
Plagiarism?
No. But we're going to explore this. All right. More like we're going to fill in the blank. Leaders are not readers when what? All right. So when they do what? What drives us crazy about leaders who claim they are readers, but all they do is what?
Read leadership books.
And all they do is read leadership books.
Yes.
Well, you know what's annoying about this? All right. So talking about leaders and reading, right? Because this quote is so prevalent. And in certain circles, it's kind of like, oh, you didn't read that book? I mean, they wouldn't say it like that, but it's almost like they just start rolling out books. So what annoys me are the leaders who pretend they've read the book. Or they pretend that they know everything that's going on. So they kind of agree with it, or they just don't say that they didn't read it, and then they start engaging in the conversation because
like
a lot of leadership
it,
books are, you know, there's that general knowledge tool.
So
what's your in that vein, Daniel, what's your opinion of the executive summary and a leadership's use / abuse of this thing?
Yeah, executive summaries are definitely, you can't say you read it.
No.
Although I do not have an issue with people who listen to books but also say that they've read them.
Oh, yeah, we're all on board with that. We're all on board with listening, counting as reading.
Yes. Yeah.
So you're okay with that?
Yeah, completely.
Okay, yes.
Yeah, and I think it's too much of a nuance when people are like, oh, have you read it?
Yeah.
And everyone's talking about, oh, yeah, I read it, for you to say, actually, I listened to it.
Yes.
And then you start, I was like, I think that's why do that.
Fine.
Yeah,
it doesn't really matter. But the executive summaries, that doesn't count.
There's a whole industry built on that, too. a sub-industry.
Oh, yeah, local people here in Nashville, too.
I mean, honestly, with leadership books, they can be helpful because most leadership books should be about 20% as long as they are. So the executive summary gets the 20% that's the distilled idea.
Mm. And so Barnabas skips votes the rest. For it, yet he won't click read on Goodreads.
I don't.
Oh,
yes.
That's a good telltale.
I vote that they're useful, not that you can say you've read the book.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, if I listen to Simon Sinek's TED Talk on Start With Why, I think
you actually should count that as reading the book.
I have gotten the concept, whereas if I read all 280 pages or whatever it is, like that's reading the book. One of those is much faster and more enjoyable than the other, and you get all of the same information. Yeah.
The issue I have with executive book summaries.
You can count that.
Yeah. That's a unique case.
One of the issues I have with the executive book summaries is that I don't think they're very helpful. They're too long to remember. Because if you read a book summary or review on a book, it's a page, right? Or maybe it's a blog post, and it's short enough that you can capture the essence of it.
And they're like 20, 30 pages long, right?
Usually, the summary ones. Yeah. But it basically takes all the stories, all the flavor, everything that makes a book memorable. It takes all of it out, and it's just plain facts.
Data.
Yeah, and it's like, how do you remember this? How do you even use it? Versus reading an actual leadership book, there might be sections that you just quickly glance over, but at least there are certain parts where you're going to remember it because of the context, because of the experience of the reading it, because of the stories.
Okay, all right, you work with leaders all the time, so... Now, I mean, we have no problem making fun of a lot of leadership books. We've already named one or two. But are there ones that you're like, hey, listen, every leader who's someone who aspires to be a better leader, they have to read these and why? Are there like one or two, three or four that you would recommend?
You know, I'm sure you guys have mentioned a few of them. And I think if you listen to the Five Leadership Questions podcast, of which... Excellent Barnabas plug. Was the OG.
Good plug. Well done on the plug. Yeah. I like
well,
that.
Well, he's the OG. He's the OG.
I helped launch that one. Daniel's helped grow it from its humble beginnings.
So with that, I mean, Spiritual Leadership by Oswald Sanders is just one of those ones that just always comes up, right? Especially
you
in like circles
that?
Like this.
I love you that do, one. You Aaron do. Has yeah. slightly less positive feelings about that.
I have mixed feelings.
That would be on my short list of books, leadership books that every leader ought to read.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mixed feelings in general. Life.
Mixed feeling. Aaron, mixed feeling. Sorry, I misspoke. Mixed feeling singular.
Dan, do you get all the feels after reading it?
That phrase it's makes so, me want to kick a kid.
Whoa!
I don't know if you should ever kick a
Leave
kitten.
The kittens out of it. Well, cats are not.
All right, cat lady Dave.
Is it a cat from Captain Marvel? I mean, you probably don't want to kick that thing.
Wait, is that? I haven't seen it. Is there a cat in that?
Yeah, there's okay. It's,
I didn't
it's
get
not
the
really
reference
a cat,
yet.
So
that was Aaron showing everyone that he was like in pop culture and up with the times.
I'm hip. Yeah. I'm cool. Tucka 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 tucka.
Dave is doing the Macarena.
That's it.
Was that?
That's all I got. That was circa.
You know, that's how kids learn the month.
Circa late 90s, Dr. Evil.
You know, that's how kids learn the months of the year now? January, February, March, and April.
Yes.
Yeah.
Boy, that,
this is why my kids are homeschooled.
I'm really bummed this isn't a
very
visual
wise.
Medium because watching you two do the Macarena is a treat that only
hey,
Aaron and I get
man,
to benefit from.
I had a fifth sixth grade sock hop this week, man. I had it on.
Sock hop.
Oh yeah. I borrowed Jeff Cooley's black leather jacket, man. I was on. Come on.
And you slicked your hair back?
There's nothing to slick back. There's nothing to slick back. No, I know all these other dads that gel their hair. I'm like, I can't really do anything.
You're like, I can look like Harry Truman.
Yeah.
Speak of the devil.
Ooh, good segue.
Well done.
That was really
Speaking
well
of Harry
done.
Truman, what are your other key leadership books, Daniel?
Yes.
Speaking of, number one. Yeah. He's a great president from Missouri. Thank you. There you go.
All right. So The Making of a Leader.
Okay.
By Robert Clinton is solid. All right. Now, I part of my master's degree, I did a lot of work learning from Robert Clinton and his work on leadership timelines and all that stuff. And then subsequently, I realized that it was made into a book. Mm-hmm. So the book, I think, is okay. But the concepts around it are just revolutionary for a lot of leaders. Because a lot of leaders, you know, you're going to look at different examples. Oh, you know, I really look up to this person or that person, or I want to be like this person or that. And a lot of times it's sometimes, depending on your denominational tradition and your spiritual upbringing, they're really narrowed into one camp or the other. The cool thing about Bobby Clinton's work is that it was this massive survey of Christian leaders who finished well. And as a result of all that, it was like, okay, what are the general transitions that people go through in discovering their giftedness and their development and their talent? So
I love that.
Yeah.
Because I feel like most leadership books take something that's a trend that has yet to be proven out over time and sort of speak to the merits of it. I mean, even Good to Great. Dave's favorite book. I mean, he had to write a book basically saying, actually, it was good to great for a little while and then not so much. So a book based on finishing well or trends leading to that is, I mean, there's not very many of those out there that I'm aware of.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's a great, I mean, the concepts are a lot better than the execution.
And that was called The Making of a Leader?
The Making of a Leader.
Okay.
By Robert Clinton. So there's that one.
Adding it to my list.
Yep. Yeah, Strengthening the Soul of Your Leadership by Ruth Haley Barton is probably one of my more modern favorites. And I mean, honestly, this is how I would put her. She's John Maxwell meets Richard Foster.
Huh. So interesting. Something deeper spiritual to the, the content.
Yeah. It's fascinating. It was a fascinating
writing it for him.
Because you have the Richard Foster, Dallas Willard. I'm just going. The Richard Foster, Dallas Willard, Henry Nouwen, you know, the kind of that deeper life, the contemplative spirituality aspect of it. But then it doesn't just live off in the ethereal, but there's the groundedness of leadership, that John Maxwell does really well. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, the cool thing is when you bring them together in female form, you have Strengthening the Soul of Your Leadership, where basically she walks through the life of Moses, and then she guides readers into, okay, how do you actually bring this from the head to the heart?
Yeah.
How do you actually reflect on this? Because I think the more leadership books you read, the more you just skip over the reflection questions and the exercises. And I'm guilty of this too. But the way that she puts it out is it's kind of hard to do it because it's like, okay, pray this prayer. And it's challenging because it's like—
You can't avoid that.
Yeah.
Right.
And it's challenging because like I don't pray like that. Mm. So it's just challenging to think through and to be like, okay, well, why don't I pray like that? Or should I pray like that? So
very cool. I like that. I love it. These are books like I don't think we've talked about. I mean, other than spiritual leadership one.
Yeah, we talked about that one.
Yeah, that's...
Well, I think it's because Daniel's bringing ones to the table that are not sort of your stereotypical leadership books. I mean, most of the ones that we've talked about are ones that have been like New York Times bestseller, but more trendy than sort of. I mean, you look these up and you can tell they've been out for a while. They have some roots, and they're looking at different aspects of leadership. I mean, one of them is The Soul of the Leader. That's a very different thing than like the best practices of a leader.
Yeah,
which is what most books try to be. I think. I mean, that's what it seems like. And usually they have like a 12 to 24 month shelf life of relevance, and that's generous.
Yep.
Love it. Absolutely. And as a pastor, I mean, my favorite one is Brothers, We Are Not Professionals.
I've heard of this one.
Yes.
Yeah. I just had to do it.
Who wrote that?
Something Piper?
I don't know, but it was published by B&H.
Don. See? Nice. Ding, there ding, it is. Right there.
Don Piper also wrote 90 Minutes in Heaven. That's the one.
You know, I remember...
a sequel?
Yep.
Yep.
Brothers Were Not Professionals. Right.
I thought that was a sequel to Desiring God.
Desiring God and then spend 90 minutes in heaven?
Yes. It's pleasure. You know, it's like...
Well, certainly better than 23 minutes in hell.
As are most things, that's true.
Yeah.
Right when I started B&H, I was working on the expanded edition of Brothers Were Not Professionals, and there's like 6 new chapters.
Wait, they Hold needed on. More?
Your dad added like 6 more items to it. One of them was about working out.
He always has more to say, you know that.
Yeah, one of them was like pastors needing to work out, you know, focus on staying healthy. And I remember I was working on it, literally I was at Desiring God at the hotel, and your dad was on the elliptical next to me, and I'm like okay. This is an action. Nice, John Piper. There
also, he doesn't use a ghostwriter. Just to clarify.
Like Yay.
In case there was any suspicion.
Way to go, Barnabas's dad.
These are the important things. He does hit the treadmill/elliptical and does not use a ghostwriter.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Things you needed to know.
Yep. Beautiful, beautiful.
And has not been busted for plagiarism, which is also nice.
It's harder to get busted when you don't use ghostwriters.
Exactly, exactly.
Yeah, well, okay, that's interesting. The integrity of the ghostwriter.
So you want to debate on that?
Okay. Yeah, no. Okay, so ghostwriting is one thing.
Yes.
But does the individual that uses the ghostwriter, do they check for the integrity of the ghostwriter
beforehand?
Yeah.
Is that part of the interview process?
Yeah, and how does that make it to the editing process? Because they're thrice removed, right?
I'm going to go ahead and say most of them don't, because a lot of them either don't hire their own ghostwriters. It's working through a publisher or an agent or somebody who's like, let's bring this person in. Mm. And it's sort of taking somebody else's word on their professional ability.
Right. Yeah. And then there are guys like, this is actually not a criticism of Maxwell, per se, but he's very open about the fact that he uses ghostwriters. But he's had longstanding relationships with the ones that he
uses. If you have a writer who sort of works with you regularly, mm-hmm. then, I mean, that sort of solves the problem you're talking about, yeah. Daniel, mm-hmm. because there's a trust relationship there. And or if you have staff writers, so people who are, you know, like the Max yeah. Maxwell has a team of people.
Yeah.
A lot
much
of
like,
pastors
James
have,
Patterson?
Yeah.
What's that?
Much like Patterson?
Patterson?
Yeah.
Which Patterson?
The like James Patterson.
James Patterson,
the novelist.
Oh, right. I was like, I'm thinking. First of all, the Patterson who shall not be named, because he was a president of somewhere. And then you said James, and I was thinking the James who I named earlier, and you got mad at me for.
I got very confused.
Yeah. Yes. Anyway.
Yes.
So if a leader is a reader and they shouldn't just read those things in the leadership genre, what are other books? Non-leadership genre that you think, like whether it's a type of book or specific books that you think are beneficial to leaders.
Yeah,
100%. Other than The Curious Christian.
Well, that's a given.
Okay,
yeah,
all right.
Of course.
That's a given.
Best,
we'll just start
non-leadership
there.
Yeah,
and no silver bullets.
And no silver bullets.
I'm
just going to go right in.
Yeah. Good job.
Daniel.
Good plugging.
Daniel Eim wrote No Silver Bullets.
Yeah. There you go.
Really.
Also your next one, too.
Yes. Just
almost
finalized the title.
Yeah, what's the title?
Pretty exciting.
Can you reveal that?
Are we allowed to say it?
Yeah.
You can say it.
Okay. You Are What You Do.
Yes.
And Six Other Lies About Work, Life, and Love.
Love it.
Ooh, there you go. So there's your next
You are what you do
and
six other
books.
Lies about
work life, and love.
Okay.
I like it.
And the release date for that is?
February 2020.
All right.
And who's it for?
For?
Yeah, who's the audience?
Man, it's for everyone who believes the lie that you are what you do. Right.
All the people.
All the people. All the feels. All the feels, all the people.
That sounds like America.
Yeah. That's, the difference, yes. though, is, and this
and
is getting
Canada.
Probably a little bit more into
in Canada.
It.
No, we believe that we are what the government tells us we are.
Government cheese apparently is good.
That should be the epilogue of the book. I haven't read it yet. I haven't wrote it yet. So
There you go. I'm happy to write you an afterword.
Yes. There you go.
And also for Canadians.
Okay. So back to the question, Barnabas's question. 100%, I think, biographies.
Yeah. Do you have
autobiographies or biographies?
Do you have
specific
favorites?
Ones? Yeah. What are your favorites?
Okay. I just finished Tiger Woods over Christmas.
Yeah.
His massive.
Is it an autobiography?
One. No, it's a biography, but it's the latest.
Be like, I don't think I'd want to hear Tiger Woods talk about Tiger Woods.
No, it'll be, it'll be like washed down, you know? Yeah. This one's good.
Who wrote it?
Yeah. I forget the name. I think Dave's looking it up here. And you know what? I mean, there it is, TMI in a lot of places.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
No doubt.
Yeah, but it was incredible to read through. I couldn't put it down because Tiger Woods, I mean, he revolutionized golf.
Yeah. He made golf interesting for like 15 years.
Yeah.
And then he washed out.
But he's still up in the top 20 right now.
Yeah.
I mean, he's still competing.
Right. But I mean, like in terms of him at his peak, like I remember, so in high school and college, I did not care about golf. I still don't care about golf, but at the
I really don't care about golf.
The Sunday of a major tournament that Tiger was in was appointment viewing because Tiger wearing the red shirt on a major tournament was like, you just have to see what he's going to do. If is he down 8 strokes, doesn't matter. He might come back and win. He's done it before. So it was very different.
He has made everyone else on the tour a lot of money.
Completely.
But I thought what was fascinating with that is what it took to make Tiger Woods.
Yes.
The cost, the value, all of that together. You get a great view
of Earl
Woods.
Have you guys read the Steve Jobs biography of Walter Isaacson? And have you read the Michael Jordan one by Roland Lazenby?
Not Jordan.
Okay.
Yeah. Because they all have in common.
Well, I'd be curious. Well, yeah, I was going to say, I haven't read the Tiger Woods, but I'd be curious how it connects with those other two, because I found those other two strikingly similar for two guys who are, you know, the best in very different fields, and Tiger's obviously akin to those guys.
Yeah. Yeah, the Jordan, I mean, Jordan-wise, he's brought into, and part of it, he's brought into Tiger's story.
Because of Nike?
No, because, Nike / Jordan's influence on Tiger and people saying to Tiger, don't hang around Jordan, don't hang around Jordan.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, but you know what? I mean, the biggest thing about this book, and it's while I was reading, while I was writing, sorry, I'm mixing up reading and writing.
I should hope it's second not. Time. So while I was reading,
I'm going to try that. I'm going to try that with my publisher. I mean, yeah. I read a lot. Does that count for anything? My manuscript is late, but I read a ton.
You too could write your next leadership book if you just read a whole bunch of stuff.
Okay, so. It was one of the chapters I was writing for my book, the one that I'm finishing up right now. And the chapter was on the lie, you are who you raise. So I was wrestling through the whole concept of you are who you raise. And I had heard about Tiger's relationship with his dad, right? Just heard. And I was like, you know what? I wonder what that was really like and if we could go a layer deeper. And what was crazy about Tiger's dad, right, and you know, we don't have enough time to go through it, but what stood out to me most about the biography and about his relationship with his dad was just how the reason Tiger's dad raised Tiger the way he did was because Tiger's dad never became a professional athlete. And Tiger's dad, his dad before he died, when his dad was like, you know, I think he was like 11 or 12 years old, basically said to Tiger's dad, hey, Earl, that's his name, Earl, if you become a professional athlete, like basically that is my dream for you. And Earl tried to become a professional athlete, but this was like just when Jackie Robinson was happening and, you know, just there's so much dynamic and he was the best player on a bad team that he never made it. And throughout the entire course of his life, he was chasing after one thing after another until finally his son became a professional athlete. So it was just like, and then once Tiger becomes a professional athlete, you actually see Earl begin distancing himself because he realizes that lie doesn't satisfy, and he begins going after other things.
I feel like maybe somebody should write a book about you are what you do and other lies that people believe about things like that. Daniel, that sounds like a really good book. Somebody
if only
should
there was a pre-order button. Yes. Out there. If only there was. Yeah.
Man, no, maybe to come out early next year. That'd be good timing.
The other fascinating dynamic of that is the fact that, you know, his dad went on to become a Green Beret.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And thus, what is Tiger Woods when he's in his dealing with his injuries after 08?
Completely
he wants
military,
to,
yeah.
He debates. He starts hanging out with Navy SEALs in Southern California and continues to re-injure his knee, which never comes out official, and that's kind of what the book explores. But that, like, he could have recovered a lot earlier, and some would say, if it weren't for additional injuries. So it's fascinating. I mean, the father-son dynamic, it's...
And that's huge to leadership, the father-son dynamic to leadership. And I don't think we give ourselves enough credit, or I don't think we think about it enough, because sometimes we think, oh, you know, that's counseling, or you know, you're talking about your past, but I mean, it's a huge part of the way that we lead.
Okay, are there any other books that come to mind too? That's great.
of the non.
I mean, would memoirs
absolutely.
Count as
absolutely?
They'd be different than biographies, right?
I think up at this point.
I think anything that's helped you as a leader. So I mean, because you've been in the pastorate before you came to Lifeway, and now you've done a lot of coaching. You've done a lot of, I mean, you've kind of helped lead technological development. You've done a variety of things. So leading in different contexts. So any book that is non-leadership genre that you found helpful?
Yeah, I mean, The Four is another fascinating book, and that was about, I forget the author, but it's about Google, Facebook, Apple,
and Amazon.
Yeah. So the author, I mean, once again, colorful language throughout the book, because he basically calls those four organizations the four horsemen of the apocalypse. But it was fascinating to see just how much those four organizations have transformed the way that we look at in, you know, life as well as leadership. So here's a great leadership principle around that. Google, this is what they found, Google has become the new priest. And that people will actually ask Google questions that they would never ask anyone else.
What should I do? I mean, like very personal private questions.
Yes, very personal questions. That they would never ask anyone else. Right.
So, what is this rash?
Actually, completely.
Yes.
Okay. So if you're a leader and you need to communicate, or you need to talk about, if you're doing research or you need to communicate it anyway, trends.google.com needs to be your next best friend. Right. Because because there's so much data right now out there that this this website basically shows you what is being searched. So going back to the book that I'm writing, You Are What You Do, the premise is that the gig economy, right? The gig economy are things that everyone doing a side hustle, right? I mean, you guys are doing this outside of your jobs.
We're making a ton.
Right?
Yeah, I mean, really. No, absolutely. I'm telling you.
Yeah. Absolutely. No, it's, I mean, the fact that you guys
even
have
tens of cents.
I mean, you guys even have a sponsor now.
I know. Right? That's true. It's amazing.
So basically, I bring that up because the gig economy, the whole idea that everyone's doing a side hustle or more people are having the side hustle. If you search gig economy in trends.google.com, you will see a huge spike, right? And it's not a, it's, and then put in fidget spinner. And fidget spinner, literally, it's just a big spike and it goes back down.
Yep.
But the gig economy, you see it continuing going up and to the right. So you'll actually notice as you communicate and you're like, oh, what about this? Is this something that's been around? So cauliflower is another thing, right? Cauliflower has gone significantly up. And you think like cauliflower? Well, cauliflower crust?
Everybody's trying to use it for the gluten-free
rice,
stuff.
Cauliflower.
Yeah, right.
They want to add something healthy in the unhealthy thing that they're already eating.
Exactly.
They want to ruin good food is really what you're getting at, Dave.
Absolutely.
So cauliflower has never been a good ingredient for anything.
Well, see, the only way to make cauliflower delightful is to mask it with something else.
Which, true. Yeah.
Like a cheese sauce, for example. Mm. Or
yeah.
Just, deep fry it.
I'm looking at the recently trending on Google right now. Now, yeah. I don't know if this is customized to what I would be inclined to look at.
Mm.
But
assume yes.
Three of the top five are NFL free agents because NFL free agency is just opening up. One of them is Felicity Huffman, and that's because there's been a recent legal scandal involving. And then one of them is IHOP free pancakes. Because I feel like they're just speaking to me,
is
actually.
Is it because it's Tuesday?
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. Is that a Tuesday pancakes? I don't know.
Yeah, so the cool thing about that site is you see years in review, what are the most popular search terms. But just, I mean, that make that your next best friend if you're a communicator. And right. If all of that interests you, read Everybody Lies by Seth Stevens Davidson.
That one is excellent.
Because that's all about data. Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, the whole point of that book is actually, you actually can't even trust survey. You can't trust anonymous surveys. You can't trust any of that kind of stuff. People will always lie.
Yeah.
Always, always, always. The only people that tell, the only place to tell the truth, Google.
Because that's where people are sort of confessing their true opinions or revealing their true selves by what they're searching for, what they're asking.
So this guy was the first person to use Google Trends and Google data for academic research.
Mm-hmm.
Because before that, everyone was like, how is this a valid set? And actually, this is like millions of data points.
Yeah.
And you, PhD student, how many data points are you getting?
312 right. or something like
right.
that.
This is exactly. The most statistically significant data that exists.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is amazing.
That's wild. Yeah. What about you guys in terms of non-leadership books?
Oh, man.
I had a ton on here. Yeah. I'll just do a few.
Yeah, do a couple. Yeah. Because there's a few.
Try to limit the number of history books to like two or three.
Abraham Lincoln. And
so I know so all right, some so, content in Dave's heart right now.
Yeah, it's in my heart. Thank you. I know. I'm not even like gesturing anything. I'm just looking at you.
I saw your heart give me the bird.
Yeah, no. You just go on, right? Other than The Curious Christian, I have got, and you know, I had a few other people, including Brian Dimbosic.
Mm. Oh, you said it right.
Dimbosic.
The hardest to spell last name.
I was going
to
say, we'll just leave out all vowels. And there's a D, a C, Brian. A Y, a Z, and a K, and just skip the vowels. Just
exactly. He's Polish and I'm Kraut. So, you know, we're a good combination for fodder. No, Endurance, the Ernest Shackleton story by Alfred Lansing is an excellent one, just on survival and, you know, calm leadership through a group of men facing death. You know, there's just something about that in Antarctica. That's a great one. I think that's one of the most powerful ones. There's a bunch on survival. I know you hate survival stories, right?
No, I don't hate survival stories.
I thought you said that a long time ago. Okay, I was like,
if I did, I was in a particularly bad mood, and or maybe had just read a really dumb one. Because there are bad books.
Bad ones.
When a book, when a book gets popular, like it usually spawns a cottage industry of mediocre books in the same genre. And I feel like maybe that happened with some of those.
All right. I'm going to do one of one. Here's one. It is history, but it's when something goes wrong in leadership.
Okay.
And that's The Indifferent Stars Above, Daniel James Brown, about the Donner Party.
I have had that one on my to-read list for a long time.
He's the same one who did Boys in the Boat.
Yep.
And but that's just one of those where, I mean, for those who don't know the story, yes, that's the cannibal story. This is like 1830s or something like that. Mm-hmm. You know, and during that time, there's all sorts of westward groups of people moving to settle in Oregon, Washington, California. And there's a point you get on the trail where there's a few different directions to take, and there's leaders of these groups of people. We're talking like 100, 150 people. That's how big that group was. And you've got leaders who don't agree with each other, who are fighting, agree to split up, and are listening to lots of different people and are leading groups essentially to their deaths by now, it's pretty uncertain going west period, so I'll give them a little bit of grace. But it's fascinating just to see what happens. But there's the negative part of that, of making very poor decisions, taking groups of people to risk their lives. And then there's how they ended up, those who did end up surviving. Yeah,
well, go, that's cool.
Eat your family. That's the moral of the story.
Well, you know what this all reminds me of,
that's
though?
That's a good moral lesson. Thank you, Dave.
Yeah, I don't know. That's all I got. Okay, thanks, guys.
What's running through my mind as you say all that is Will Ferrell and Bear Grylls. Have you guys seen that?
I haven't seen that one, but no.
Man versus Wild. No, yes, seriously, if you haven't watched that,
I love this.
If you have not, just YouTube Will Ferrell and Bear Grylls.
I'm going to do that.
Man versus
today.
Wild. Okay. It's incredible.
You can guarantee that Will Ferrell would be eaten first.
Well, of course.
It'd be very marbled meat, as they say.
Oh. I feel like if you enjoy the humor of this podcast, you would enjoy that special. Because
I enjoy that special.
It's basically Will Ferrell giving color commentary while trying to escape and while Bear Grylls is trying to keep them both alive.
Trying.
Well, they have both survived, so it did work.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert.
Well, they didn't climb up the mountain.
I'm really disappointed now. Thanks, guys.
They just went down.
Oh, I wondered how that would play out.
Yeah, spoiler alert.
Aaron, what do you have on your non-leadership books for leaders?
Okay, so I've got one. I've actually got one on this that is one that I previously ripped on pretty hard on a previous iteration of this podcast called Canada by Mike Myers.
Oh,
there is one thing in that book that is
so glad you brought this up.
Super helpful. So one. Just to reiterate my rant on the book, that it super ticked me off when he is writing about how, you know, all the things that needs to happen, the great hope of Justin Trudeau in Canada, which, spoiler alert, that's a train wreck.
yep.
We know a little bit about
a good-looking train wreck compared to the American train wreck.
I was going to say, at least you guys have that going for you. We have a train wreck of our own without that.
But when McLean's Magazine, which is a super, like, politically progressive magazine, runs a cover story, Justin Trudeau imposter. That's bad news there, guys. But it's all kinds of bad. But
this has turned into a Canadian civics podcast.
It's okay. But I'm going to the point. So the point is, Myers made a very insightful point about the struggle for the Canadian identity, which is that we have none because we're a country without a mission statement.
Mm.
So there's not a compelling reason. There wasn't a compelling reason for Canada to exist in the first place, to become a Shut up.
Sorry. That's the punchline to a joke, except you didn't, like, you just said it in all earnestness.
Because it's true.
And Canada's identity is not that of America's top hat. Yes.
Yeah, correct. We basically are, we're just desperate to not be Americans. That's only thing that unites us. There's no overriding culture. And that's one of those things that's really helpful for me to think about, because it was I'm not crazy for thinking that. But that's a helpful thing that,
or you're just equally crazy like all other Canadians.
Well, there's that too. But the helpful part of it from a leadership
perspective, I'm just doing my part to be a smug American. I feel like this is setting the tone.
You're doing it.
Okay, good.
Job.
Just wanted to make sure I was playing my part well.
Thank you for living up to your stereotype. It's appreciated.
Doing my best.
Absolutely.
Can you feel the love?
where's my Bud Light? Let's build a wall on that border too.
At this point, I really don't know where.
There's the last one. Last one.
Okay.
Is Slugfest, the epic 50-year battle between Marvel and DC by Reed Tucker.
Ooh.
That one is fantastic.
Cool. The Business Wars podcast.
Yes.
That's
what they built it off of.
Is that one good?
Those episodes are
amazing.
Okay. Yeah, so Business Wars is a little up and down in terms of which ones are good, but the Marvel versus DC ones are really,
those
really good.
Those were gold.
Yeah. And it's called Slugfest?
Slugfest. Okay. Wow. Inside the epic 50-year battle between Marvel and DC.
Hmm.
The whole point in that, the biggest single takeaway from that book is don't try to be your competition.
Hmm.
Don't compare yourself to who you're not. Just figure out who the heck you are, and maybe I would have said something stronger, but I might
have to.
Thank you. Should I bleep myself this time? I think I might have
by
to.
By all means, you control.
That was pretty strong language for a
Canadian.
I know.
Oh, jeez.
Said heck.
Oh, no.
Sorry, guys.
Apologize.
Sorry, Daniel.
Do I get to recommend any books, or are we just going to listen to the Canadian talk politics?
Do it.
All right. I have no Canadian civics books on my list, so listeners, you're welcome.
Shame.
A bunch of ones that I would have suggested have come up, either like biographies and autobiographies, history books. So a couple that don't fall in that category. One is Rescuing Ambition by Dave Harvey.
Good choice.
It's I think specifically for people going into ministry, but just people in any context who are trying to figure out the balance between godly humility and having ambition to succeed and be great at things, because there's a push and pull there. And I think most leadership books tilt heavily into, I'd say, not very godly ambition. So Harvey does a really good job of laying that out and looking at spiritual gifts and how God designed us, things like that. So that's a really good one. And then on the sports book side, there's one called The Captain Class by Sam Walker. He gives a criteria for how he picks the greatest sports teams in history across like all sports. So there's cricket teams and rugby teams and volleyball teams and football and basketball and like your major sports as well, soccer obviously. And then he looks at what is the single thread that ties them all together, what sets these apart. And it was a captain of the team who is usually not the best player on the team. And so he gives this whole, it's like really fascinating stories, but also kind of data on how it all worked out. And so that one is, it's more leadership than sports, but if you're a sports fan, you'll kind of love it for all those anecdotes too.
Cool.
Those are my
awesome.
Were there any other ones that were like we talked, sports is inherent leadership in sports, and I guess Canada, you're talking about politics.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm of course going to the history route. Anything that's like totally non-traditional. Any other fiction book that we'd recommend?
Okay, so here's an off the cuff one. Books by humorists. So like books by comics, because they have a way of observing reality that sees things that other people
miss.
Point. The best comics make observations that you've seen every day and never noticed. And so there's an aspect of leadership of like if you can see the things that other people are missing. So books by good humor authors fall in that category.
Yeah. Cool.
Very
cool. All right.
Daniel, is there any others you want to add?
I would encourage you to read outside of your genre.
Yes.
And read outside of and men to read from women.
Correct.
Yes.
Because I don't think enough men
and
read from women.
And white people to read from people who have other cultural perspectives.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. Like I just finished everything.
Very carefully worded.
That was good. That was
I
good.
Just finished Everything Happens for a Reason by Kate Bowler.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
I've heard that's excellent. I haven't read
it. Yeah. And it's not a book that I would ever really typically read, but
it's a good one.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So.
Awesome. Does any of you think about, we'll put in the show notes.
Sounds good.
Love it.
Yeah.
I know.
Awesome. Guys,
what are we reading? We have to do a quick, what are we reading?
Well, there's one thing we normally do before that.
Oh, God.
That's right. We got to do a Sucker Punch of the Week.
That's right. And because we have a guest, Daniel gets to
give
us the Sucker Punch of the Week.
This is the Jack Reacher Sucker Punch of the Week. This is a bit. This is anybody related to books. So it could be an author. It could be a fictional character. It could be kind of anything in the book realm that you just think deserves to be Sucker Punch.
It's expanded quite liberally.
It used
liberally.
To be fictional characters only, and we've expanded it into real life because Dave got angry one day.
Angry.
Man, you know.
Well, yeah, it's like as a book connection. 40 that's
Dave.
It.
Yeah.
This is 40 Dave.
This, I mean, not only am I Canadian, but I'm Korean, so it's like, I don't ever go against authority or people.
Oh. Authors are not authorities. As yeah. one, as both of us being one, we both know that we are not authorities on anything.
But also, as a fellow Canadian, although not a Korean Canadian,
although not a Korean
yeah,
Canadian.
Yeah, so I only have half of that,
yes.
that you're talking about. I know. There's a lot of punching that goes on in the heart.
Yes, yeah. That just, you never actually verbalize.
Okay, let me contextualize this for you. Imagine
this is a safe place.
Imagine you were playing hockey with this person, and they cross-checked you.
So who are you going to
drop the gloves and just go for it with from the book realm?
Okay, this might upset.
Purely on the hockey
record. Okay, this might upset a lot of people.
Mm.
Right.
Okay. Like in this room?
Especially those who are reformed.
Oh,
and I'm excited.
Yeah,
sorry, we're going to bleep that word later.
I don't know if I should do this.
No, I'm excited. Go for it.
Do it.
Okay, after I say his name, can I give a reason why?
Yes. Of course. Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely. You're expected to give a reason why.
Okay, Charles Taylor.
Okay.
A Secular Age.
Interesting. Okay.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. So the reason why it's I can't understand the guy. So maybe it's just that I'm not smart enough.
If you can't explain yourself well enough, you get a punch to the face.
I can't smart enough. Maybe I'm not smart enough.
I think he's Canadian too.
He is Canadian.
Yeah.
Oh. So
you want to punch a fellow Canadian?
Yes.
Keep it in the family.
Okay,
this is great.
Let me keep going. So he wrote a book called A Secular Age.
Yep.
Which among many reformed individuals, it's making this huge comeback and everyone loves it. And
yeah.
They're always talking about all this stuff. And I started reading. I mean, I got like 150 pages into it. And I felt like I was back in university where you read and you still don't understand what you're reading. So I started reading other people's thoughts on Charles Taylor and I was like, okay, I get why the guy's so influential. And I love the thinking behind it all. But man, I just wish Charles Taylor could have written better. Yeah.
That's a good word.
That's right. A good right. choice.
I like it.
Yeah.
Daniel wants to smack the clarity into Charles Taylor.
Wow.
That was a strong take.
Well done.
I applaud.
Yeah. I'm proud of you.
What do you got?
For Sucker Punch or
you
for
can
what
do
am
both.
I reading?
Do both.
Well, no, let's just leave no, it. Let's just go with the one
that
Sucker
was so
Punch.
Strong. We can yeah. only have one.
That okay. was great. Okay, what am I reading right now? I am reading. Hold on, my Goodreads is loading really slow, and I can't remember what I'm reading.
All right.
Do you want me to just jump ahead of you?
No, hold on. Give me one sec. Here we go. I got
it.
I'm reading. One of the books that I'm reading is According to Plan by Graham Goldsworthy. It's basically
Ooh, very nice.
An overview of biblical history. Going through this with some folks at church, and I have to say I was not excited to start this one. I was like, this will be like eating a salad. It's a thing that I know I will feel better after I do it, but I will not enjoy it at all. However, Goldsworthy has completely surprised me with how well and enjoyable, like he writes so well. Everything you just said about Charles Taylor is not true of him.
Okay.
He is clear. He is concise. He sums up his points in a way that feels very like the best sort of sermons. And he does not waste words. So he's, you know, his chapters are 8 or 10 pages long. They get to the point. He covers a key part of scripture. It's excellent. And it's not written I don't feel like I have to strain intellectually to track with him. He just sort of pulls me along. So According to Plan by Goldsworthy, really good.
Excellent.
And a great surprise to me.
Excellent.
All right. All right, I've got Walker Percy's Lancelot. Anyone read it?
No.
Have you read The Moviegoer?
No. I've only read a little bit of Walker Percy, and I really enjoy his style, but I haven't gotten into it much.
So I didn't like The Moviegoer.
Okay.
It's funny, like that's the big award-winning one, but Lancelot I love so far. I don't know. I mean, I'm only like 40 pages in, but it's really good. So there you go.
That's awesome.
He has a unique style.
Yes. I can't compare it to anything, but it's fascinating. Yeah.
Go Daniel? Ahead.
Okay, so I don't know if you guys have ever talked about the Enneagram, or you guys refuse to talk about the Enneagram.
No, we are not anti-Enneagram.
Okay.
Don't worry.
We're not.
Yeah, so, my entire marriage, Christina and I have thought, every other personality assessment, we've been opposites. But when we did the Enneagram, we both discovered we're both threes. I'm three wing four, she's three wing two. And it's just opened up a completely different world of understanding just us together, you know, individually. So we're the road back to you. Our small groups were beginning to work through that one by Ian Cron.
Nice. Very cool. Well, I am working my way through Us Against You by Frederick Backman, which
it's a sequel to Beartown, right?
A sequel to Beartown, the second in a trilogy.
There's a third
one coming.
Yeah. Man, you guys need to get a room when it comes to Backman.
It is.
He's the new Leifanger.
He is. And he's Swedish.
Swedish.
He's got that exotic thing going on too.
So.
End this now.
It is phenomenal.
Aaron,
it
are
is.
You sweating and blushing a little bit?
There's some fangirling going on here.
Dana's like, okay, I guess I should go now. Yes. I gave you guys till noon.
It's now 12:02. Yeah. So it's a great book. I'm really enjoying it. I'll talk about it more on another episode. But Daniel, man, thanks so much for being on the show.
It was fun. This is going good. From a listener to being a participant.
There you go.
Thanks for what you do, guys.
Thank you for listening. I didn't know you did that.
Oh, real quick. And you have to say your other podcast with your wife. Go ahead and tell.
Yes, the In Between. Like my last name, I am. Yes. In between
not
podcasts.
In between.
Marriage, relationships.
Yeah, marriage, parenting. Everything in between. Yep. It's really awesome. Fun.
Cool.
Yeah, don't listen for me. Listen for her because Christina's a blast on the podcast.
You're a good man.
There you go. Well done.
Good
well
Canadian done. Man.
All right. So, Daniel, thanks for being on the show. Guys, thanks for hanging out as always. And listeners, thanks for tuning in. Please leave your glowing 5-star rating and review on iTunes because that's what you should do after this. Do also purchase a book or 10 from one of the links on the show notes.
Specifically, No Silver Bullets or The Curious Christian. Those are the two best that were mentioned on
those
the show.
Are the key ones.
Just totally. The seminal titles,
you know,
if you will.
Also, you can throw in a purchaser 12 of Epic, The Story That Changed the World as well, since that comes out in a couple weeks.
And you can pre-order Dave's Tell All at some point. It's about 20 that years away, be, but I'm gonna get a link on Amazon.
That's
going
to be the greatest. Yeah.
It's called Off Mic.
Should be pre-order, like written in 2025.
Yeah, exactly. Greatest leadership book ever to be written.
Be
is
careful
Dave's.
What you say to Dave. So,
that's actually the title.
So. Yeah, Dave's book is like Dr. Dre's forthcoming album that's been forthcoming since 2001.
All right. So thanks for listening. We'll talk to you later. Bye.